Jesus going to hit me? Not that bad. So during National Poetry Month, there is this website that was giving writing prompts, and one of them was write about a baseball game, and I thought, no. And then I actually thought of something that would be interesting. I went to one that really stuck with me that was after September 11th, and people were uber nationalistic. It was a bit hard to be around. So this is called Please Rise for the National Anthem. Bush Stadium 2002. The immense sound of a flock taking off as spectators rise. I am thinking through no act of my own. Hundreds here stand, I hold nothing while their prayerful hands fold to their chest. This is someone else's family reunion I'm at. I sit in uncertainty, scared as anyone at the smoke on our screens, the falling bodies, and the fallout billowing cinematically at news cameras. Scared, too, at the fervent love that the meaty man next to me feels for our country. Scared that he will make meat out of me for my indecision, for my perpetual discomfort in any crowd that sounds as one. Every pipe calling the larger message of God, of country, of faith and dominance. Inveterate, agnostic, on no one's side, I choose voiceless. No discordant shouts of protest unnoticed. I'm heroless, but unheroic, only certain of the fact that there are more sides than two in this tribal and endless game.
Complicated being American.
Totally.
Mary O'Connell.
Okay, this is called VAT or IP. Three guesses. Dodging that wasn't seen as too clever when your man got 6 years in the clink, cause the apples turned out to be garlic, but at least he's not decked out in pink. Now, Mick Wallace, as flamboyant as ever, is known for his problems with that. With blonde hair that goes down to his shoulders, he turned into a bit of a prat. The revenue paid him a visit, though he says he made the first call, €2.1 million to settle. They might as well talk to the wall. He says he can't pay his providers, not to mind pay his tax or the bank. The reason he says he's in trouble is because he's too straight and too frank. He sold 5 of his flats to his family, gave a vineyard to his brother Joe to pay for supplies that he owed him. Now his business has nowhere to go. Some poor sods who can't manage their mortgage are often turfed out on the street, but the people of Wexford keep shouting for Mick to hang on to his seat. Of the technical group he's a member, the new shining hope in the dial. Their silence on Wallace was deafening. Not the case if he'd been Fianna Fáil. When he says he'll return half his wages to pay what he owes to the state, someone else had to make that suggestion, or he'd end up outside a church gate. This TD told us all he was sorry. 15 minutes was all they allowed. His father, who shared in the business, has a son who has not done him proud. The sports ground he built for the youngsters is the one thing that stands to his name. But a lawmaker cheating on taxes must accept that he's largely to blame.
Billy.
this is one I was working on there recently, compares the human brain to a city, you know, at night with all the electrical impulses and whatnot. And it's a poem about incarnation, about the moment when like the soul of the person enters the embryo of, you know, the embryo. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Creation. That's you're yeah, that's
the moment though.
You got it. That's yeah. That's it anymore. No gridded city this, no endless section field of light, all sodium rectangles. No planned place you're descending slowly toward. This lightscape simply formed itself. Its messy centers splashed there in medieval happenstance, partitioned by what churning channel. Its north sides gullied uplands, fizzling out and dwindling into jagged blackness, its flat soap plain. Can you sense beyond it the humours of the sea? But this city's built for you, and your desires will pulse in never stinting traffic through its arteries, through the broad jewel carriageway that span its bones and meet in raveled interchanges, injunctions not even your own mother could unpick, before splitting their brightness into local routes that terminate in capillaries, slope lanes and cross-patched back alleys, damp and loved cul-de-sacs. And this is where your memories will live, in these districts of light, city block after city block flicking on and off in unpredictable rolling blackouts, awaiting your descent. Strange how from up here is just a bright machine, a network of impulses, of information signaled in flashes. And what software this contraption's running, programs entire species live and die to develop, what applications. You know I can only go with you so far. This pilgrimage must be made solo into embodiment, into these receiving systems. Your soul stuff will fuse with these parishes, this infrastructure, and you must savor or suffer alone three amniotic months, and then the birth canal and everything that comes after, you lucky thing. You're nearly landed now, nearly down among the pathways that swell and contract as the light pushes through them. It reaches up towards you from those streets or trenches, rising and receding arrhythmically, a breathing mist. You think this is brightness. Believe me, this town will go nova when you take up residence. Every precinct will glitter, every suburb throb with brilliance at that instant. You're not afraid. You know what you've come here to do. Are you ready there to be this avenue you've set down on, to be those far off flickering hills? You're not asleep. Thanks.
Hearing a couple of urban legends when I was a child. I was a child at a time before the term urban legends was invented. I'm going to recount a couple of urban legends for you. Maybe some of you tonight who don't know that Foxglove is otherwise known as Digitalis. Digitalis and small extracts can be used to treat heart disease. Larger extracts, it's a deadly poison. And also the yew tree, its leaves and seeds are deadly poisonous, while the fruit is edible. There was Alison O'Leary from Greig Road, who couldn't stop chewing on her own hair. Long, mousy strands, so coarse, so abundant, no one noticed the absence of hundreds from her scalp. Though naturally sinuous, their long weight pulls them straight. They curled up in her belly like a nest an indigestible vermicelli, blocking all passage of food, so she died. Then there was the nameless girl from Pierce Road, joyous on her honeymoon in Mallorca, 1971, an early chartered flight, who, without knowing, ate a rosate-tinged lettuce head with a raw reptilian egg hidden in the clusters of its organic tongue. In 3 weeks, it hatched inside her, a creature replete with teeth, 4 feet with claws, which gnawed away at her insides as it grew from the sides of a worm. So she died. A sad, lonely girl near the lock played all alone at shop. Blue mussel shells for banknotes. And on her vegetable stall, yew berries, stinging nettles, leaves of dock and digi tallies. As her own customer, she sucked the sweet red flesh of the yew fruit before spitting away poisonous kernels. Of all the leaves, digitalis was the most crisp and least bitter, with white and lilac blossoms capping each of her digits except her toes. She ate wads of the greenery until her heart stopped, or so it goes.
Woo! This next poem is drawn from my experience when I was growing up in the 1990s. On 2FM, the radio station in Ireland, there was a Dave Fanning show which was on for 8-10 p.m. weekdays. And it produced the best of Indian alternative music there was. And it was kind of saving, things for someone like growing up in the 1990s, such as me. This is called What's the Alternative? 8 p.m. was a holy hour. Homework stitched up at evening, after fashion, and fit right to the radio to put it on and tweak it appropriately, for Dave shines so we always tuned our ears. To a scattering of crumbs before the local acts, Mr. Markers, here we come. Spin the bowls and the sect, vying for national crumbs. The blank tape was always ready. Surrender to the record button. There's one rule, no talking. No ads, no talking, no jingles, no room for discussion or answers. But this was 8 p.m. and this was holy hour.
Simon, see here. Simon.
I just have a haiku called Ovale and also a poem called Ovale. So I can't come here for a while, so I just thought I'd read these up. So the haiku is, what would I say if I knew I could not return? To each soul, thank you.
Aww.
And the poem is, the only thing I need to say about this is that St. Jude is the saint of hopeless and lost causes. He makes an appearance, so. So it's called Ovale. There will be a room that you sit in with a glass and a drink and high windows and the sacred word and love and at times lust, and the wing of a phoenix unfurled and never to revert to dust, and St. Jude's hands near yours, and even though sometimes you wonder if you could be, after all, one of the unapparent souls playing their roles everywhere, while secretly longing to be anything other than what they are, there will be published and unpublished reminders to you alone that there is a light and it never goes out. And there will be lives you never knew were being lived, and moments that you could not have cared about, and or ever could have welled up about until you lived them, and you will. And there will be children who stay young forever, and empathy will become a word that just isn't good enough. And there will be a lady there who dresses with style, and her lines will make you laugh out loud in high windows. And there will be another lady representing Buddha's bloodline, her heart so kind, and people who close their eyes when they listen and open their mouths ever so slightly and wait for the spirit and then seem to receive it, and high windows and almost the sky, but you won't need it. And the candlelight will move freely, and there will be a man who in that light will look a lot like a strong gentle silverback having found sanctuary there, who could teach you things. And that hand near will land upon yours if ever you shake, and you will, like a heart that knows it's still beating and not just a piece of red meat. And there'll be an apple from a woman's bag that she never intended to bring, dragged up from the dark, thrown up on the bar by the taps, but it won't be a trap, and the gods and their backs will be turned when you bite, and you will, before stirring within a dream, having been washed clean, and you'll look all around and then straighten to see the brightest green sheets of the softest grass, and a blue cloudless sky, and someone waiting for you, and by their hand you'll lay down and stay, and you'll be home once more, within the walls of Eden, and you'll never have to leave, and magic will be yours again.
Today I took a slice of time to share with you at your grave on your birthday. I ran my fingertips through the grass which is nourished by your passing. I breathed in the summer air and felt your arms around me. My tears ran to moisten the soil. All I can offer, I am raining for you. Each time I come and sit and cry, you leave me feeling light, released. The patchouli clouds call the grief from my heart and fluff it up. As I make my way to the silver gates, I take time to think of those whose stories are told alongside yours in this most important gallery, where birth and death are written in stone and the sacred sapient sculptures are embedded in the earth, heightening the senses of the passerby as he or she salutes each artist's signature. And I bow my head to each and every one in gratitude for such honesty, as nothing is more true than death.
Just one more reader on the open mic. That's Rosalind.
Thank you very much. What an honourable place to be at the end of the list on this honourable day for me. I came with the happy news that Lapwing will take my first collection on. And when something that you've worked towards for such a lengthy time in your life, knowing you're a poet and that's where you want to get, comes through, it's just so amazing. I have to share it with you all. Yeah. thank you very much. I think I couldn't have done this without the inspiration of O'Vale and the people that I shared with in the whole time. I have a new poem here, which is not going to be in the collection. It consists of four parts. By the sea. The sea is lapping like a cat, gently licking up the beach, purring sleepily, soothing me. Two. The view stretches my eyes far, far, allows the mind to wander beyond every unknown bay and releases the will of words springing from the bottom of an emotion. Three. The rocks look like an old leather book, creased and wrinkled, pressed from lying between other books for aeons after thorough use. Millions of years written in these rocks, I wonder who reads them now. Four. The lack above the cliffs is invisible. Her sweet song in the evening blue tunes me in, opens my ears, and makes my heart sing.
Hard won contentment that lay on the couch. Fledgy slide through duck egg sky, evening tide. The poet cogitates, considering numinosity far surpassing the masters of yore. A glee is he, rhapsodizing responsibly with the turning of the year. His love is Odin, life living golden. He cleaves to the valley spirit, his female ally,